a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 272. And, wow, I am kind of a mess today. I woke up with a horrible sinus headache this morning and spent the better part of the morning taking medicine and sitting in the hot showers and cold rooms and doing all of my little ritual that I've been doing since I was 5 years old. So thanks, Mom and Dad. Thanks for those bad sinuses from both sides. Appreciate it. I mean, it's imperative in Colorado too. You just have to stay hydrated so much. And if I just don't stay super hydrated, or if I have a little wine and then kind of don't kind of up the ante on water or something, it happens more often when I'm at altitude, it seems like, or someplace really dry. But man, I just out of nowhere, I had no expectation that that was going to happen. And I woke up just absolutely hurting this morning. So it is what it is, but I'm pretty exhausted. But I'm going to try to do, I got a pretty good show on tap here, I think. So we're going to try to get through it and find some nice connections. Hopefully I can be nimble enough to do justice to this outline that I've got. I built the idea for the show before I knew where I was going to lose 3 hours of sleep on a sinus headache and be hurting. So, okay, Monday weekend wrap up. I forgot to mention on Thursday night that I went to the candlelight mass. I think I forgot to mention it. I'll mention it again. So Our Lady of Lourdes has these candlelight masses. And during the summer, they're outside in the grotto, but on the winter time, they're inside. And I haven't been to one in a while, and man, the place was just absolutely packed. Just absolutely packed on a Thursday night. People could be doing so many other things. And then about half of those people headed over to Hanson's Pub afterwards, and we kind of took over the entire upstairs. And so it's good. There's good community here. I take it for granted sometimes. And just a mad shout out to Father Brian Larkin and the people that put that on, John O'Brien, that do cool stuff like that for us to have a way to get together and be with each other and to be with our Lord in the Eucharist, but in a way that's kind of extra drawing, you know. Anyway, so Friday, I put this on Facebook. I just didn't want to do anything. I was so tired. I said on my show Friday I was doing nothing, and I stuck to it. And my version of nothing was watching Lo and Behold by Werner Herzog, it's a documentary about the modern world and the internet and all of that kind of stuff, while having a sip of bourbon. So I put on my Facebook page, I was like, so sitting in your room alone in the dark, drinking bourbon and watching Werner Herzog, that's a normal Friday, right? I got a response as everybody from people worried about me to people going, what are you watching? Oh, we watched that last week. Have you seen such and such? So it was like the Herzog people kind of got it. But the key to watching a Werner Herzog film is you have to forget you ever saw that Dieter, the Sprockets sketch on Saturday Night Live, because he's kind of got that that German existentialist kind of like cadence that is, once you get used to it, it's fine. At first, it's a little distracting. The guy's a genius though. Lo and Behold, I'm going to probably do a whole show or at least a couple of segments on Lo and Behold at some point. There's a moment in there, Ted Nelson, this, theorist guy, talks about how the universe and all of reality is this vast interconnection of relationships and interpenetrations and all this, this beautiful tapestry. And writing is the collapsing of that and the capturing it into some small little sequence, this linear sequence. And he said, it's an illicit act. And I'm like, that sounds so like me trying to write a paper, man. I tell you, I just, everything that I leave out or every connection that I leave out, I just feel like I'm lying or leaving something unsaid. I got to write books one of these days. I don't know if I could ever write a decent paper to save my life. But, Saturday after, doing some repairs and some cleaning and some, work at the shop, I got home and I was all ready for another. I didn't finish. Lo and behold, I fell asleep. Like I am that level of old man. I fell asleep watching TV in my recliner. I mean, that's where I'm at in my life. I fall asleep watching TV in a recliner. I know it's bad. I admit it. It's bad. but I was enticed and I was kind of broke. I just bled money in New York. And after buying that car, I'm just like, I've been saving for a car for a while. And so I had money. I didn't want to spend on anything other than a car, but the very fact of being disciplined and kind of saving up for something. And I had a couple of good months with some consulting and stuff. So there was some money there. Is, you know, I didn't have to kind of think about money as much as I normally do, because for the first time in a while, I had a decent amount of cushion sitting there. And then I bought that car. Took care of some other stuff, did that trip to the New York encounter, and now I'm like broke again. So I'm like, I'm scraping for a few weeks here. So I had determined to stay home and finish Lo and Behold, but something just too attractive came along, and I ended up, Jim Ducky Laurent gave me a text and said that he was going to see Silence with some people from CL. Now that was good enough, because I missed going to see Arrival with the same crowd and having the conversation afterwards. And I really was bummed about it, because I thought it would have been an incredible film to do that with. In Silence, I've been wanting to go see, but I kind of had, this is what I do. I'm like, no, I'm not going to see it till I've read the book. I want to read the book first. So I bought the book. I've been carrying the book around, read a little bit on it. Just keep carrying the book around. Never got the, now I wanted to see it on the big screen. So now I'm racing to get the book. When am I going to get this book done so I can go see Silence before it leaves the Esquire? Finally, I made a great act of self-knowledge and just went, dude, you're probably just not going to finish this book before. Do you want to see it on the big screen with some people and have a conversation about the story? I'm like, yes. Okay, go. So I did. And it was spectacular. It was a great evening. So all the normal CL peeps were out and all the Communion Liberation folks, but there was an absolute surprise. There was a two or three strangers that I didn't know very well, but Holly Peterson was there. And Holly Peterson, she works for Communion Liberation now. She has written the only PhD thesis in America applying Jazani's educational thought to the high school, American high school. And she's she knew Jazani. I mean, she's kind of CL royalty. She's one of the voices on the podcast. She does the podcast Something Revealed, and she's a big gun. You know, she's in the movement in America. In the movement, I mean, she's kind of CL royalty. And we have mutual friends, and I've always kind of been a fan. I've never got to spend any time with her, and so it was great. We all went to the movie, and then we went down to Angelo's Taverna afterwards for happy hour, the late night happy hour, and it was great. I got to drink a couple of cheap glasses of Barbera, eat a little pizza, and have a beautiful conversation with a bunch of really interesting people about this movie, which is, I'm going to talk about the movie a little bit today. So spoiler alert, not going to do a full on show about the movie Silence yet. Kind of hoping to get Tim Ferlin back on, because he just did a class on St. Francis Xavier, and he knows this history really well, and he's been championing and really excited about this film coming out. He loves the novel. So I'm going to try to get Tim to do an interview and try to talk about silence a little bit. So I'm going to hold off any deep, 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 long commentary about that work, but I am going to use a few moments in that film to talk about some other stuff I want to talk about today. So please be advised that there may be spoilers if you haven't seen Silence or read the novel. I'm assuming everything that's in the movies in the novel, roughly story-wise, it seems like there's one or two things I've heard that are in the novel that are not in the movie. So finally, on Sunday, man, I just slept in and I missed Divine Liturgy. I just didn't get going. I tell you what, there's two things that fight against each other in my heart on Sundays. I love I don't like going to Saturday evening or even Sunday night mass, but I like to get up and go to mass on Sunday. I think that's the proper thing to do if you can. But man, I love just slow Sunday mornings. You know, I'm tempted to start singing Easy Like Sunday Morning by Lionel Richie. I love just kind of just getting up slow and hanging out, making some coffee and reading. And I know all of you family people are going, what? No, you mean like when kids wake you up at the crack of dawn, even though it's your day off and you have to give people cereal and then clean it up. Yeah, I know. I'm a selfish single man. So, but I miss out on other stuff, but I love that slow Sunday morning. So I gave in and had a nice slow coffee and books and reading Sunday morning. And then I spent the day, reading Leadership and Self-Deception, a book that Joe Burns had turned me on to back at the Augustine Institute a long time ago, and that I don't think I ever actually read. It was assigned in that class, but I think I was in full-on freak-out mode that semester by the time I got to it. So, oh, goodness. All right, when we get back, I want to talk about this day that we are celebrating today and the context that it's happening in, and a couple other things. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Let my sacred word to mutter, ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Okay, so when I went to the break, I said this day that we're celebrating. I meant, say, remembering or something. We're not celebrating anything. If anything, we're mourning something. But this is a day that we mark here. This Monday, the 23rd, is a Monday that we mark. And we mark it because if I'm not mistaken, this is the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. The decision making abortion legal in America. And so every year on this day, or this is on January 22nd, sorry, and it gets moved over to the next day, I think, if that lands on a Sunday. Today's the 23rd. Yeah. So today, it says it falls on a Sunday. The designated observance is Monday, 23rd. Yeah, I'm reading from the website of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Today is a day that a day of prayer and fasting for the legal protection of the unborn children. So today is the day that we fast and pray and remember that in 1973, when I was 3 years old, they decided that it was like cool and okay to kill a baby in a mother's womb, which that ain't cool. So what's interesting is that this one is coming. So every year we do this, and then right about this time we have Walk for Life West Coast, which happened this last weekend, next weekend, March for Life in DC. Every year, tens of thousands, possibly, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, scads of people, go and march in the streets in all these cities. And it's this huge, giant thing, and you wouldn't know that it existed by watching the mainstream news. I mean, think about that. Think of something roughly the size of this big woman's march that just happened, that all we heard about for days and days and days happens. Like in a major city, our nation's capital gets shut down and just taken over by people in the streets marching to make a point. And it goes almost completely unmentioned, just barely maybe in passing every year. So that's interesting. This year, I just found this kind of stark, and this is what I wanted to, this is kind of the route I want to take on this. On the same day, roughly, I think that Friday was the march. When was Walk for Life West Coast? Within a day, I think they might have been on the, I think they're on the same day. There was Walk for Life West Coast, and then next week will be the March for Life. So there are people just like in the streets, and they're two completely different sides. One of them is marching in defense of the defenseless, and one is marching for a myriad of reasons. But one of which, protesting for the right to continue for them to be able to kill their children if they want to. Now, here's the problem. They don't, obviously, we've talked about this a million times. They don't see it as killing their children, most of them. Some of them do. Some of them see it as a human life that they are ending. They admit that it is a murder, but they say, look, it's them or me, and I have to take precedence. I mean, there are sections of the pro-choice movement that have gone there in the modern world, which shocks me. You know, it always shocks me when something that I used to be able, if you could get someone to admit this in a conversation or a debate, then it followed logically. Oh yeah. You know, if we were arguing with one of my Protestant friends and I could get him to admit that the table of contents, that the canon of the New Testament was the product of a council and hence only held up by the authority of magisterial teaching, then it was either like, well, you have to say that your Bible, if that's infallible, then the teaching authority has to be infallible. And now you have people who will say, well, no, the table of contents is fallible, like R.C. Sproul did in Sola Scriptura. You know, it'd be like if you did the C.S. Lewis liar, lunatic Lord argument, and you got them to admit that he's either a crazy man or he's evil, or he's exactly who he claimed to be. And then they admit he's not crazy, he's not evil, and that he is exactly who he claimed to be. And then say, well, I don't want to follow him anyway. I don't want to change anything. So, you know, that's, you just don't see that very often. Usually when you get, people try to wiggle around these arguments. And now that the modern world, if you could just finally get someone to admit, oh, I see your argument, I can't refute it, no, that is a human life, they would look, there's got to be something. They would try to argue with you about that. They say there must be something I'm missing or whatever. But now in the modern world, they go, no, it's a human life, and we're forcibly ending it purposefully. No, that's, I admit that that's the definition of murder. It is a murder. It's a murder that has to happen, though. I don't know what to do with that. But so that's not the tack I want to take on this, because so here we have all this going on at once. You've got Donald Trump, you know, entering the White House, which just in passing, man, what is it with Republicans? It's God love you guys. God love you, precious darling angel. I mean, the first day that the Republican Congress is back in, their very first thing they do is they try to undo this ethics bill, which is such bad optics. And it got shut down. And then they turn around and pass a budget with over the screaming body of Rand Paul. They pass a budget with $9 trillion extra debt in it over the next 10 years while they're talking about small government and fiscal responsibility as a tool to repeal Obamacare faster, but they don't have a replacement for it. Little bit of a rough start out of the gate there for the Republicans. So what is we have a new Republican president. Everyone's very skeptical of him. on both sides of the aisle. But what does he do? He gets into a peeing match, you know, with the media over the size of his inauguration crowd. I mean, seriously, it's not like this stuff isn't quantifiable. It's not like we can't tell by a million different metrics, by the subway and the rail system and aerial photographs and all that. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anyway. It was pouring down rain. It's the least Washington candidate that anyone has ever seen. It doesn't matter. And yet Trump and Spicer got into a peeing match with the media and then sent out Kellyanne. What's her name? Kellyanne Conway, which one of the funniest, meanest things I've heard lately was, Samantha Bee, who I'm not a giant fan of. She's funny, but she's mean and she's hyper liberal. She said, Trump administration spokes cobra, Kellyanne Conway said. Spokes cobra. I'm like, God, so brutal. Oh my gosh. Anyway, she comes out and says, well, they were giving alternative facts. Now I know she was trying to say that they were giving facts on the other side where maybe there's two sides of this. It just sounds bad. It's just like I just don't know. It seems like Republicans don't know how to speak in a way that doesn't sound awkward and will not be taken wrong by everyone. I just don't understand it. Anyway, and on top of that, but while I'm ripping on our president, well done, Mr. Trump. He reinstated the Mexico City policy today in an executive order. And that's one executive order I'm damn okay with. From Reagan all the way through Bush, I think it was all the way through Bush, but up until the end of Bush for sure, you could not use the federal funding for the promotion of abortion on the international level. So they called it the Mexico City policy, right? And then Obama, like in his first week, just like killed that, right? So they give money to Planned Parenthood and they can't. In their international, you know, kind of like aspect, and other people like that, other NGOs and stuff that promote abortion in a third world as a solution. And so now he has repealed that and said, or has reinstated that policy, and now they can't do that anymore. So well done, Mr. Trump. But just so you look at this, you have all these women marching in the street. And all these people marching on the West Coast for life. And next week, all these people are going to fill those same streets in Washington for life. Now, before we go to the break, I just want to say, look, I understand. I have friends who are kind of supporting these feminists and doing their thing or whatever. I understand that it's not only about abortion. A bunch of the money and support behind it was Planned Parenthood and Soros and all these people. It's very pro-abortion. You just look at all of the signs and everything. It's about abortion to a great extent. I feel like that guy with the aliens. I'm not saying it's aliens, but it was aliens. I'm not saying it's about abortion only, but it's about abortion. But that being said, look, if I were a woman and we had just elected a president who was like on his third marriage, who had treated women the way he's treated them verbally, and then had said the things indicating it, whether he was lying or not, that he had basically sexually assaulted women and they'd let him get away with it because he's famous, I'd be in the street too. I get it, man. I wish we had a good guy doing the things that we need done. Unfortunately, we get good guys in that are ideologically on the wrong side. So we're going to get a guy that's maybe not the best guy. Hopefully he's going to do some good stuff. He did a good thing today. I'll give it to him. So, but I want to talk about that problem and the conversation between these two movements when we get back from the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media, Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we've got this country split down the middle, right? I just never seen more stark. In 2 weeks, two weekends in a row, you've got hundreds of thousands. I don't know what the final number was. 1.5 million nationally, I think. Women in the streets protesting for their rights, mostly for abortion and whatnot, but also, and it was interesting, there was like this huge debate where right before the big women's march, there was kind of factions within it, and people were like, look, you white women need to take a back seat and let women of color and these different kinds of women that are different than you step up and let their voices be heard. And they were just, there was like, and some people were all offended, and it was so fun. There was kind of an identity politics clash right before the thing happened, but they still managed to put that many people in the streets, seemingly unified behind at least a list of grievances and concerns. And yes, there were just idiotic stuff going on. But I get it. Like I said, man, I'm not a giant fan of the person that we have put in the White House. If you listen to this show, you know that I was firmly one of those quote unquote conservatives that was very much never Trump. I did not vote for the man. I've been very skeptical as to whether he will maintain the interests of his base, and especially along the lines of the pro-life stuff, even if it comes to losing something on trade or something. And I mean, I will say him doing this executive order about the Mexico City policy on the first Monday in office, first working day, that's a good sign. Here's the thing, is that I don't care if he does everything right. Maybe I'm still idealistic. I know we've had a bunch of rotten people in there, but I'm holding out for a decent human being doing the right thing. As I said before, said a couple of episodes ago, I think Obama is a decent human being. I think he loves his wife and he's never cheated on her. I think he cares about being a good role model for his family. The guy makes evening dinner with his family, and he's the leader of the free world. He prioritizes sitting down and eating a meal with his family. I like the guy. I'd like to drink a bottle of wine with him and pick his brain and ask him about his philosophy off the record and talk to him a little bit about his presuppositions, whatever. I think he's profoundly wrong. Same thing I said about Bernie Sanders. I think he's a good human being. I think he's profoundly wrong. I think he's bought into an ideology. I think Trump is profoundly wrong in a lot of ways, but I think on a few things of a practical matters of trade and taxes and encouraging growth and business and, you know, at least the outward actions of this pro-life stuff, I think he's doing the right things. I wish we had a good man in office doing the right things. But if I can't, so far we've gotten like good dude, we got a good dude for 8 years, an okay guy, a decent dude, doing some really wrong things for the most part. I'm just not a fan of the policy. So great, we'll take a bad guy to do the right stuff. I mean, if that's what, I'd rather at least have the right stuff done. And in some ways, I don't really care who does it. It'd be nice if we had a decent human being, but I don't know. Maybe this is just such a profound matter of difference of culture that maybe I just can't understand a 70-year-old rich white dude from New York that was raised in privilege and spends 99% of his time either on a golf course or in a room with like marble and brass and glass and, you know, just like fancy, you know. Maybe I just don't get that dude. Maybe if I was raised the way he was, I would be a bigger jerk than he is. Who knows? But So we got these two things happening. These two sides are so indicative. And I just think we need to look at how to say it. When I was watching Silence this weekend, and like I said, spoiler alert, I am going to talk a little bit about the movie Silence. If you haven't seen it yet, you might want to not listen to this part, and if you don't like spoilers. So I'm going to use some ideas from this movie to kind of talk about this situation, because I think we as Catholics are trying to convert these other people, right? These people have a culture, a set of presuppositions. They have a set of presuppositions about us. They have a set of presuppositions about reality. They have a set of presuppositions around how you view issues and what's important. And, you know, if there's a clash, what wins ideologically? They have all these presuppositions, and we have all these presuppositions about them and about who they are and why they act the way they do and why they believe and say the things they do. And it's just what you see. What I saw in Silence was kind of a clash where it's like, in some ways, where if you just like made these two parades run into each other, and they just had all these banners and slogans that were proselytizing the other, it wouldn't work, right? It's just, you can't just go right at it that way. And so, like, so the movie Silence is about Jesuits from Portugal going to Japan. And, you know, St. Francis Xavier has already been there. There are 300,000 Catholics. But then at some point, the Japanese government saw this as kind of colonialism and enculturation and cultural colonialism, so to speak. And they saw this as a political issue with political ramifications, and they outlawed Christianity, and it became a banned belief system. And so they started persecuting people deeply. Now, this movie is pretty, at least the topic of it is right on target with the news, because we're watching deep persecution of Christians in the Middle East right now. We're seeing barbaric, evil torture and execution on the news and videos on the internet and stuff. So this stuff is happening again. And so, but what's interesting is that there's a million things, and there's all these questions over the big issue around the movie Silence is about whether or not he should have given in and tried to save the people that they were going to torture until he apostatized, and he did apostatize, right? And the question is, should he have done that, or should he have held firm regardless of whatever suffering was happening around him, knowing that it wasn't his fault that the people were suffering, and you can't do an evil act to get a good end. There's the big question that's flying around a lot about this movie. I'm not going to address it today. That's not what we could do a whole show on that. I'm going to try to get Tim on to talk about that, because he's way smarter than me and he knows about this stuff. But it was interesting though, because when he, we see these moments where they are clearly misunderstanding things that they're believing in. They believe in this thing and they're willing to die for it. But you can see that they kind of haven't quite grasped. They haven't had a priest in a very long time, and they haven't really been properly catechized, and they don't really understand what they're doing. They just kind of have this attachment, and it's kind of superstitious, and it's kind of based on these images, right? And at one point, he's given each of them like a little piece of a, you know, a cross he made or something. And at one point he breaks apart his rosary and gives each one of these people a bead to hold on to when he's gone. And he's like, and he says he worries, at one point he says he worries that this means more to them than it should. And it's interesting. So then when we get to the, we see all this amazing courage and faithfulness under torture in the movie, And then when he finally gets and he finds this other priest that was there who's apostatized, he says, these guys, they're not dying for Christ. They're dying for you. They're just this our symbols don't translate. They didn't understand what you were saying. They meant, and he says, you know, we said the Son of God, and you want to, they meant the S, they translated that to the S-U-N of God, the Son of God. They don't understand what we're doing, you know? And it was funny, like one of the guy who's kind of like the Grand Inquisitor says to him that, you know, nothing grows in this swamp. He says, basically what he was saying is that only native plants grow here. This is a place where you can't bring your stuff, and they have them take root. But it's interesting. They're imparting these concepts, but the concepts, the connection between the concepts and the reality are getting lost in the process to a certain extent. And the question is, how to say it? Do you try to go and convert and share your answers, and or do you share your recipe, so to speak? Do you proselytize or do you share your recipe? Now, I think that Xavier probably was a little more likely to have came in. That's why I want to talk to Tim about this, and been more to enter into dialogue with him and have conversation and try to find common ground and speak to understand how they view the world, and then try to speak Christ in that language. And that's where I want to go. That's what I want to talk about. So let's get to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Wade.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely. And I'm done.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. And we're talking about these two marches and these two camps and the great division in our country right now. And I'm just kind of using the movie Silence I saw over the weekend and some ideas in that to kind of build a language to kind of talk about what I think the problem is. And so we've talked about the imparting of concepts, which concepts are artifacts. They're not the things themselves. There are signs that point to something. There are thinking about something, and there may be an analogy, and there might be a connection through analogy, but an analogy and speaking directly of something is not the same thing, right? The problem is with things divine, you almost can't speak about them directly. You have to speak through the mode of metaphor, through the mode of analogy. But that gets you one step away from something when your senses can't be involved. You're one step away, and now you're very fraught with how people understand and interpret the concepts that you're throwing at them, and they can end up hearing something you're not saying. And even and possibly embrace it, and possibly embrace it to the point of death. And then another issue was, the big issue was to do this act of apostatizing, as they were going to step on this little picture, a little brass image of Christ or Our Lady, to prove that they were turning away from the faith, that they weren't going to be a Christian anymore, that they were rejecting God in a way, right? And the big issue, I mean, this is kind of like in the trailer pretty much, and if you read any description of the movie, basically this priest is super willing to die for his own faith, but then they just keep torturing all these innocent people in front of him, and they keep saying, we're going to keep torturing these people until you apostatize. And so he does so to save them, but now he's put himself on the other side of that line, right? Now, any good Thomas would tell you cannot do an evil act to achieve a good end. Right. So we used to just have massive debates at the college I went to about this around the dinner table. So there is a button, and if you push this button, it's going to kill one random person somewhere in the world that's innocent. But if you don't push the button and kill the person, there's this evil genius that's going to blow up entire nations and kill all kinds of people. Do you push the button or not? And like, well, you can't do it. That's an evil act. And if he does kill a bunch of people, that's on his soul, not yours. And I'm like, well, that always just shook me as, I didn't want to say you could do evil to achieve good, but that just seemed so impractical to me, you know. And when I got into another big argument a lot of time about whether or not you could lie, if the Nazis showed up and said, hey, are you hiding any Jews? And you had some Jews in your attic, you know, could you say no? Could you just lie? Is lying okay in that situation? There are big fights over that, right? So the issue of us being stuck to just do an act qua act, an act in as much as it is that act. See that act only through what that act is in itself, and not in and just kind of ignore, bracket apart any kind of context versus the results that that act will bring about. There's a question. That's a big, big theological question. I mean, there's all kinds of things we could do about withholding and about the law of secondary effect. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we could argue about, but I'm not going to go there. Not yet. So, I guess what I want to talk about is that the nature of the act is obscure in the sense of, do we define an act by the results that it'll have, or do we define the act in itself? Now, fast forward back to, or rewind back to these two marches. One side is saying, this young girl is pregnant. She can't support this. And, you know, and she needs to be able to go to college and take care of herself, or she's already has three kids and she lives in a ghetto or whatever. She needs to be able to be in control. And I don't care what it is. I don't care objectively if it is a baby. I don't care the end result. It's about the results that matter. And you can say whatever you want about this act, but this, it doesn't look like a kid. It's a little clump of cells. It doesn't look that. It's obscure, and I can do whatever I want. And we're going, no, it is what it is. We have to name it by what it is. And it's ontologically, it is a human life, and you can't do that. And in some ways, they're just speaking two completely different languages. We're coming at it with two completely different perspectives. And I think that the time of being able to speak only in our concepts and only from our perspective in the attempt to proselytize and convert, and with an emphasis on that objective nature of the acts and things, I just don't think it works anymore. I think we've gotten past that point. I'm not saying that's not the reality. I think it is the reality. Things are what they are. But I think that we need to find a way to be heard what we're really saying. And we need to check our presuppositions and check all the assumptions that we're making about the other side, so to speak. Because here's the thing is, man, this, I think that these two marches are completely in, they're indicative of the reality that we live in. They are in physical space, culturally, and just in general, the way we live. We might as well be a pro-abortion feminist just in a march with the only people around us being other people that are pro-abortion feminists. And we're only using those arguments and those lingos and that lingo and putting those symbols and those slogans on our banners. And those are the only people we ever meet. And they're the only people that's around us. And it just becomes this echo chamber, right? Well, that's exactly where we are. One of these two marches is mostly right. One of them's mostly wrong. But all those Catholics walking down the street with their pro-life banners and all their Christian t-shirts on. And I saw pictures of the Walk for Life West Coast. And it's just like, you can see them both fashion, lingo, music, D, all about, they are just like in the same culture and just completely surrounded by people who are like-minded. And the thing I was thinking about when I was watching, Lo and Behold this weekend, which is that Werner Herzog documentary about the internet, is that I've talked about this deeply on the show before, but it's like, we have gotten to the place where we, even if we are physically in the same space with other people, we're not with them. We're in community. We're not alone in a crowd. We're in community. It's digitally based around belief systems and inside connection with people that aren't in the room. So if I go to Thump Coffee and hunker down in the corner and drink some coffee and work on something on the internet, then there's all these super liberal millennial hipster types from Capitol Hill all around me. And I am in community, but I'm not in community with them. I am, you know, texting Chris Stefanik, and I am, you know, talking to someone about Breadbox Media, and I'm, you know, making a note about this show, and I'm reading this theology book, and I'm Facebooking with my friends that I went to Thomas Aquinas College with. I'm in this rich, multifaceted community in this whole culture. It's just like this bubble that I travel around with. And it, in some ways, it's this bunker that ever is impenetrable to the people around us. And I'm saying that we have got to be the ones that break out of that. We have to be the ones that try to go first and lead the way out. We have to be brave enough to leave the foxhole, maybe get shot in the process, but walk over to the other foxhole, look down at that shoulder, that soldier that's been shooting at us, and go, "Hey, I got an extra cigarette. You want to have a smoke? We can go back to shooting at each other in a second." And maybe, just maybe, the guy will crawl up out of the foxhole, you can share a light, and you can stand there and, you know, "Ask what part of Germany you're from." "Oh, I'm from, you know, Berlin." "Oh, yeah. So how long you been in the army?" You know, you get to have a conversation. We're going to have to get there. And I know you're like, "Well, no, this is battle. You don't do it that way." Well, great. If we're going to continue demonizing everyone, we're doing this battle's just going to keep going. And so if your goal is to win, and that's your only goal, is to defeat or convert, then great. But I don't think you're going to get that by doing this. I think the only way we're going to get there is by learning the language and earning the right to be heard. And so I think we need to start. Great. We need to have our Walk for Life, West Coast. We need to have our March for Life. Great. Go to the streets, march. I'm in. I really am. I really do support it. Those things are important to do. But that's one time a year. The next day, go to a coffee house, go to a bookstore, go someplace where there's people completely different than you, and just be normal. And then keep doing that until you're one of the crowd. And then now they have someone that they love, that and they care about, that they respect, that holds those positions they demonize. And you've learned that they're not demons either. And then heaven forbid we can have a conversation. I think that the Democrats did not learn this lesson, and they ignored an entire swath of the nation, and it cost them an election. And we're in danger of doing the same thing if we think this is just a bunch of bitter people mad about an outcome. All right, let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place in my old stone. I take your place in my old stone.